The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to listen to Jesus. But the Pharisees and the scribes began to complain, saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So to them he addressed this parable. "What man among you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, would not leave the 99 in the desert and go after the lost one until he finds it? And when he does find it, he sets it on his shoulders with great joy, and upon his arrival home, he calls together his friends and neighbors and says to them, 'Rejoice with me, because I have found my lost sheep.' I tell you, in just the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who have no need of repentance. Or what woman, having 10 coins and losing one, would not light a lamp and sweep the house, searching carefully until she finds it? And when she does find it, she calls together her friends and neighbors and says to them, 'Rejoice with me, because I have found the coin that I lost.' In just the same way, I tell you, there will be rejoicing among the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Then he said, "A man had two sons, and the younger son said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of your estate that should come to me.' So the father divided the property between them. After a few days, the younger son collected all his belongings and set off to a distant country, where he squandered his inheritance on a life of dissipation. When he had freely spent everything, a severe famine struck that country, and he found himself in dire need. So he hired himself out to one of the local citizens, who sent him to his farm to tend the swine. And he longed to eat his fill of the pods on which the swine fed, but nobody gave him any. Coming to his senses, he thought, 'How many of my father's hired workers have more than enough food to eat? But here I am dying from hunger. I shall get up and go to my father, and I shall say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as you would treat one of your hired workers.' So he got up and went back to his father. While he was still a long way off, his father caught sight of him and was filled with compassion. He ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son.' But his father ordered his servants, 'Quickly, bring the finest robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Take the fattened calf and slaughter it. Then let us celebrate with a feast, because this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found.' Then the celebration began. Now the older son had been out in the field, and on his way back, as he neared the house, he heard the sound of music and dancing. He called one of his servants and asked what this might mean. The servant said to him, 'Your brother has returned, and your father has slaughtered the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. He became angry, and when he refused to enter the house, his father came out and pleaded with him. He said to his father in reply, "Look, all these years I served you, and not once did I disobey your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat to feast on with my friends. But when your son returns, who swallowed up your property with prostitutes, for him you slaughter the fattened calf." He said to him, "My son, you are here with me always. Everything I have is yours. But now we must celebrate and rejoice, because your brother was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found." The Gospel of the Lord. Good morning, everyone. It's always a great joy to be here with you today. I think it'd be fair to say that we tend to be people of excess. If we look at anything around us in our culture and our society, we see examples of excessive behavior. And a lot of it can be very bad. A lot of it can be very good. Perhaps we see the most excessive things right here in the Bay Area when we just encounter just the billions and billions of dollars that are here in this area, right? We don't have to go too far to see amazing properties, homes, amazing lifestyles. And yet, in just a few blocks away, we see tent cities, and we see excessive poverty, excessive mental illness, drug addiction. But yet in our own lives too, we tend to be excessive in our habits, whether it's been watching on Netflix a whole weekend, or whether it's just going out and eating a lot of food, or whether it's exercising to an extent where we almost hurt ourselves. I definitely will say I'm a person of excess. When I really get into something, I really get into it. And I was reminded of that yesterday, and I'm actually feeling it right now, when I went for the first time here surfing with friends of mine, and they were teaching me how to do it, and I was getting really into it, and I just kept going and going and going for like 2 straight hours in the water, and my friends were like, "We've never seen anyone like stay in the water this long and try to catch this many waves. I think you're gonna be really hurting." Well, I definitely am hurting right now. But we tend to go to extremes. Of course, a lot of times this has disastrous consequences because it can make us neglect other things in our lives when we focus on one thing too much. And of course, it's even more disastrous when an excessive behavior becomes an addiction. And of course, the scourge of addiction is what can break up families, relationships. So clearly, there's a lot that's being done to try to address this need for us to be excessive. And if you go to a bookstore, you'll see a whole slew of books on self-help. If you go online, there's plenty of TED Talks and other types of material out there to try to help us understand what it means to live a life of moderation. a life where we're able to keep things more in balance, where we don't go to extremes. And clearly, I think that the counter value, so to speak, of excessive behavior is this virtue of moderation. So the person who's the most moderate, or the person who seems to have a very good balance of their life, is the most virtuous person there is. And while as excessive as I could be with my behavior at times, I do realize too that I prize this sense of moderation, and I can a lot of times almost look at myself and say, well, you know, I'm happy that I'm not able to look at particular issues and be too far to the right or too far to the left, that I take a centrist position on things. So even I look at this whole notion of moderation as being a good. Now, clearly, those self-help books and the whole idea of moderation and balance are definitely not bad things. And clearly, they are a good way to prevent destructive behaviors. Yet, if we look at the scriptures today, we see an emphasis on excess. And we see this in how the prodigal son lives his life. This is a person of great excess. Even his request to have all this money that would normally come to him when his father would die is a very excessive request. Just think about this for a moment. The son goes to his father and says, "Dad, I wish that you were dead, but you're not. So can I have the stuff that I would get if you were dead?" That's the request that the son makes, right? That's a pretty excessive request. It's not just like asking to borrow the car for the weekend. Now we know darn well that there's no time, no place, no culture, no family situation where it would have been acceptable for a son to say to his father, "I wish you were dead. Let me have what I would have if you were." But this excessive request is equally matched by an excessive response, where the father just gives him everything. And as the father gives everything and the son takes everything, more excessive behavior ends up happening, where everything is then spent excessively on all the different entertainments, amusements, and pleasures that still happen today. And then, when the son has excessively spent everything, he is now in the lowest of low positions, excessively working on a farm with swine, pigs, which would be the most repulsive to a person of the Jewish faith. Yet, the excessive behavior continues, because once the son realizes that he's really out of luck, he's in a bad way, he crafts a speech as a way to be able to weasel his way back into the good favor of his father, who he essentially wished was dead. And how does the father respond? But in an equal prodigal way, wasteful way. Because the father excessively is looking for his son daily, and then excessively gives him everything that he could possibly want on his return home. This is a story of excess. And the question I think we have to ask ourselves is there a place in our lives for excessive behavior? If we tend to be excessive, almost naturally, and then we try to temper that excessiveness by moderation and by trying to live a good, balanced life, is there anything about excessive behavior that could actually be a good thing for us to indulge in? And I would say there is. Because the one thing that we could never stop doing is coming to the realization that at every single moment, in every single situation, in every moment that we walk outside or when we wake up in the morning and walk around our house, we have the opportunity to fully embrace God's presence in our midst. Our lives are only in existence because of excess, because of God's excessive love for us. Every single breath we take is only possible because of God's excessive love for us. Every situation that we find ourselves in, the most joyful or the most problematic or the most painful, is only made possible because of God's excessive love for us. But yet, we tend to want to be more of the older son. We tend to want to think that clearly the way that God reveals his love to us is when we do things right. If I do everything right, if I'm a good person, if I follow the laws of the church, then I will receive God's love. And of course, this is not a foreign thing for us to think about because the way of the world is that way. You act well with your parents reward you. You have a job, you do good at your work, your boss rewards you. And we transfer that dynamic into our relationship with God, thinking that God only showers us with blessings and good things and rewards us when we do everything right. But the reality is that when we do everything wrong is also the time when God reveals the depth of his love to us. The excessive depth of his love for us. It's hard not for me to read this gospel and to think about how, as much as I would like to kind of cheer on the older son saying, this is just simply not fair what the father is doing, I can't help but go to the younger son and say, I can't believe how many times I was that younger son. I know darn well that I reject God far more than I say yes to him. Even with the graces of ordination and living in a very churchy world, if you will, and trying my best to have a disciplined life and a life of moderation, I know that I resonate more with the younger son. And it's by that memory, if you will, or just the simple knowledge that I fail that I'm constantly reminded and brought closer to the ongoing mercy and love of God in the present. And that is the way to excessively be able to acknowledge, to know that at every moment you're unconditionally loved. When we remember the times that we have failed and we were somehow brought back. We all have memories of when we disappointed a person and the person extended forgiveness to us. We were in a jam and someone got us out of it. And all those human examples reveal to us how God is constantly working with us. It's the great joy of the confessional. Many times we may think that it's embarrassing for us to have to go to confession because we're good people. We try to do everything right. We follow the teachings of the church. We love the Lord and the Eucharist. And there's a sense of being embarrassed going into the confessional to actually admit just who we really are. But that confessional only exists because God is just dying to give us his excessive love. And each time we go and come out of that box, when we once again are aware that we're not left alone, that this isn't the end. There's another day. There's a new beginning. There is a mini resurrection, if you will. So today, as we reflect upon this excessive behavior of God's love, let us respond equally with an excessive acceptance and an excessive heart of gratitude, knowing that we're always wanted and that we always have a home with God the Father. May God bless you.